A very good Monday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer, your host. Glad to have you on a show with us here today. In addition to national and regional agricultural news headlines here today, Taylor Chalstrom will be in with a report talking about the Seeds for Bees program. Stay tuned for that information. We begin with National Ag News right after this word from our sponsor.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen is applauding President Joe Biden for signing the bipartisan Ocean Shipping Reform Act into law. Passed by the House of Representatives last week on a vote of 369 to 42, the measure seeks to address export backlogs and supply chain disruptions that have severely impacted agriculture. The signing by President Joe Biden marks the first real regulatory effort to understand and correct the current bottleneck at ports, the inability of agricultural producers and processors to efficiently export food products, which have been stranded at ports to rot, has resulted in detention and fees at rates far surpassing global averages. He says these disruptions have severely impacted the lives and livelihoods of farmers and ranchers. Last year, the port congestion cost California farm producers $2.1 billion in lost export income between May and September alone, and the problems continue. He says it is the California Farm Bureau's hope that the enactment of this bipartisan legislation reinstates fair trade practices for farm producers. And he says they look forward to quick action and coming weeks that brings greater transparency to fee charges and, in the coming year, redefines what it means for an ocean shipper to decline an agricultural shipment. They are urging the Federal Maritime Commission to employ tools under this act to ensure fair practices by ocean carriers and accelerated shipping for California's vast array of agricultural products. One in five Californians, that's about 8 million people, currently struggle with food insecurity. California's dairy farm families are partnering with Feeding America to deliver California cheese to Feeding America and California Association of Food Bank feeding programs throughout the state in a $300,000 pilot initiative called Shredding Hunger. The initiative is part of Real California Milk's hashtag CA Dairy for Good program to increase access to nutritious dairy foods like milk and cheese. Cicada Seed America has officially announced two new business establishments in California's major agricultural centers, Salinas Valley and Woodland, California. Since 1988, Cicada Seed America has operated its North American headquarters in Morgan Hill, California. The company recently initiated plans to relocate its headquarters, including all operations and personnel functions, to its 219-acre site in Woodland by late 2024. The planned relocation of Woodland Innovation Center will follow the second phase of an infrastructure expansion project that began in 2016. WIC celebrated its official opening in 2018 when phase one of the building project was completed, which boasted 16 acres of operational facilities, including greenhouses, an LEED certified office, head house, washery, a 25,000 square foot warehouse featuring the latest technology and seed processing equipment, and farm shop. In addition, there is ample farmland to host Cicada's annual California Field Days event and serve as a permanent trial location for the company's expanding breeding programs and research and development department. Even as the on-premise sector continues this long road to recovery from the pandemic, California table wines in general have struggled to maintain momentum, declining by volume for the second time in 3 years in 2021, according to Impact Databank. The California category has been slowed by fierce competition from imports as well as by spirits. Table wines from the Golden State fell 2.5% in volume terms last year. Premium-priced California labels continue to buck the trend, however, as table wines priced at least $15 rose at near double-digit rates again in 2021. One tier below, at between $10 and $15 a bottle, results were mixed last year among California table wines, but there were some solid gains registered. And California table wines continued to struggle in 2022, falling a combined 9.5% by volume in Nielsen IQ channels in the year to date through May 21st and down 5.7% in dollar terms. But while California table wine brands priced below $15 a bottle declined in IRI channels, year to date ending May 15th, labels priced above $15 advanced 3.6% by volume and 5.7% in dollar terms. Among the 25 largest selling table wine brands year to date in IRI channels, 19 declined and only 3 increased at double digit rates. The height, the widespread nature, and a continued acceleration of inflation dominated the headlines in May. According to the May edition of the IRI Monthly Survey, primary shoppers, consumers are extremely aware, and many are applying lessons learned during the Great Recession to tighten spending. That, according to Jonna Parker, team lead of the Fresh Foods Practice at IRI. Awareness of inflation has been extremely high since the early fall of 2021. The difference between then and now is the level of consumer concern about inflation and the subsequent reactions when buying groceries, which are intensifying by the month. The widespread nature and height of inflation are pressuring spending for many consumers, including 38% who described their financial health as strained. 30% of American households stated they struggle to afford needed groceries. At the same time that 45% of consumers look for sales specials, 55% said that fewer of the items they want are on sale, and 42% felt that items were not discounted as much, according to the May survey. Despite the high gas prices, 16% of consumers visited more stores in May than they normally do to capitalize on sales promotions or everyday low prices. The share of the home prepared meals continues to average around 80%. Consumers would like to eat out more, but recognize that home cooked meals are cheaper. Compared with the fall of 2021, inflation is higher and more people are making changes, and the supply chain challenges from labels to packaging to transportation and labor continue to be significant, according to Joe Watson, Vice President, Retail, Food and Service and Wholesale for IFPA. May 2022, fresh produce sales reached $7.5 billion, surpassing a record set in 2021 by over 3.2%. However, looking beyond dollars that were highly affected by inflation, unit and volume decline. May was the second time that vegetable sales were decidedly above year-ago levels since the second quarter of 2021. Vegetable dollars increased by over 2.3%. At the same time, year-on-year fruit gains have been slowing since the fourth quarter of 2021 to just over 3.9% in May of 2022. In May of 2022, berry sales continued to be more than double that of the number two seller, which is melons, according to Parker. Pineapples dropped out of the top 10, and cherries made their inroads. Volume sales are a mix with increases for berries and grapes, but down results for all other top 10 sellers. 8 out of the top 10 vegetable sellers grew sales versus a year ago, according to Watson. Pound sales were down for most fresh vegetables, with cucumbers being a lone exception in the top 10 sellers.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The nonprofit APIS-M has opened registration for their Seeds for Bees program. APIS-M is a nonprofit focused on ensuring the health of the commercial honeybee, and their Seeds for Bees program provides reduced cost or free seeds to growers for planting cover crops, which can provide forage for honeybees. Rory Crowley is the director of the Habitats program for APIS-M.
So Project APIS-M, we are a honeybee organization, and specifically a commercial honeybee organization. So Apis mellifera is the Latin term for the Western or European honeybee. And Project APIS-M really has three overarching missions or goals or departments. First, we do research on the things that are affecting commercial honeybees. So the varroa mite, for example, or certain diseases, or a lack of forage, which is my department. We get the best scientists involved really in the United States and Canada. And we study these things. Out from there, our second leg of that stool, as it were, is to provide kind of field resources for commercial honeybee keepers that ultimately go out of that research. So we have a number of resources for beekeepers that grow out of our research. And the third leg of that stool is really where my department, my purview. And so I'm the director of habitat programs here at Project IPSM. And my specific responsibility is to look after our Seeds for Bees program. The Seeds for Bees program essentially is a working lands free seed program. So we at Seeds for Bees, we essentially can give growers free seed to plant in the context of their orchard or vineyard or any really working lands in California that is bigger than 2 acres, cover crop acres. And so that's really my program. That's really what I focus on here at Project IPSM.
The Seeds for Bees program is available to most growers and can provide an increase in the quality and duration of forage available to bees, which can increase their health and productivity.
One of our missions here at Project IPSM certainly is to provide extra forage for commercial honeybees and also for native pollinators. I mean, we believe here that a rising tide floats all boats. Our mission particularly is for beekeepers and Apis mellifera, or the North American honeybee. And so I think at the end of the day, Seeds for Bees really helps us fulfill that mission by providing, you know, kind of the pitch is we want to provide extra density, diversity, and duration of available forage when other types of forage are scarce. So for example, how that plays out is we try to plant cover crop seed in the month of October in an almond orchard, for example. A grower will come to us, he'll get his or her free seed allocation. They'll put it into the ground in October, hopefully, ideally. And by mid-February, we have extra blooming forage when other forage might be scarce. So for example, bees come in early February in an ideal world. And the trees typically aren't blooming at that time. So in that scenario, other types of bee forage, flowers, pollen, nectar are scarce. And so what we want to do is if we get that seed planted in October, we're able to have extra available dense and diverse forage for bees to utilize as their food source prior to those commercial blooms. So that's just one example of how we try to fulfill that mission, Project IPSM's mission with Seeds for Bees.
Cover crops can provide a number of benefits for growers as well as bees.
You know, planting a cover crop here at IPSM, Project IPSM with our Seeds for Bees program, we are really about the honeybee, right? The commercial honeybee. But that doesn't mean that we don't care about growers. Clearly, growers benefit in many, many ways when it comes to planting a cover crop. Two ways kind of rise to the surface in my mind. Number one, initial research, and again, we talk a lot about almonds here because almonds really kind of are throughout the Central Valley, from the tippy top of the Central Valley down to the bottom, from Red Bluff down to Arvin, right? And it's just a big industry. But initial research that was conducted in the last couple of years has shown, now we still need more research, okay, has shown that almond orchards with cover crops could give as much as 80 to 120 extra pounds of almonds with a cover crop, as opposed to the controls without a cover crop. We need to continue to substantiate this, but this is enormous for a grower, especially in a time like this. In other words, bee productivity goes up. Pollination activity goes up if you have an active forage cover crop in your almonds. That's a huge point. That's my point number one. So number one, we've got this bee productivity increase in yield scenario for the grower. That's huge. That's direct money into a grower's pocket. But number two, what we're finding out more and more through the research community is that our cover crops, specifically at Project IPSM and through other means, just private means, cover crops, generally speaking, that provide extra density, diversity, and duration of available forage also help the soil in immense ways. I mean, some of the most obvious we all hear about are, you know, in the context, again, of an orchard or vineyard. There's a lot of compaction that happens there with tractors. The ability for a daikon radish or a canola or even a mustard root to penetrate compacted soil is proven. Another proven side of this is keeping dirt where it belongs rather than having wind erosion or water erosion happen. That's proven. We're also starting to see increases in biological activity, which we're coming to know more and more as growers is so, so important. You've heard the dictum, perhaps, more roots in the ground, always have roots in the ground. That's going to help your biological activity. That's going to help your soil thrive. I absolutely believe that 100%. As a grower myself, I've watched it. I've watched the soil come alive when I plant cover crops. So from the bee health perspective, the bee health, bee productivity perspective, and from the soil health and soil productivity perspective, these are two main reasons that help the grower. It puts direct money back in the pocket of the grower with yield. And number two, it creates that long-term investment in the soil, which is your most important resource.
The total water demands of cover crops can be relatively limited. Using certain low water demand winter cover crops, irrigation practices may not even need to be modified to keep the cover crop and primary crop healthy.
Growers can apply to this program right now. We have an open enrollment for 3 months. This is a little bit of a shift from what we've done last time. We need to focus on when we are planting this seed. And what that means is we need to make sure growers have their seed or have applied for their seed prior to harvest. Harvest for many farmers in the Central Valley, particularly in tree nuts, happens in August, September, and October. Now, if we can ask growers like we're doing right now and have a strong communications plan to growers to say, apply now, do it before harvest, don't worry about it during harvest, then we can focus on getting that seed to the grower's door in a timely manner to plant October 1st or in the month of October. So go to projectapism.org. Click on our Seeds for Bees tab. From there, there's a little drop down. It says apply now. We do have some requirements of the grower. We're asking growers to participate in an annual survey if they do participate as an awardee, which happens in the spring. We do require two verification photos at the end of the grower's cover crop season, which happens in the spring as well after the bloom. So, very low bar here in terms of requirements.
For My Ag Life Daily News, I'm Patrick Cotter.
Unsure of your navel orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from navel orange worm. Rango is an OMRI listed broad spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
Earlier in regional agricultural news, I had a story featuring the California Farm Bureau president and his positive reaction to President Joe Biden signing the Ocean Shipping Reform Act into law last week. Farm News reporter Michael Clements now has a report with the American Farm Bureau Federation sharing more information on what this means for U.S. farmers.
President Joe Biden signed into law the Ocean Shipping Reform Act Thursday afternoon, applauded by the American Farm Bureau Federation. AFBF President Zippy Duvall attended the signing ceremony at the White House and says the Biden administration worked with Farm Bureau to support passage of the bill.
The Biden administration has been a strong ally for us in working to get this bill across the finish line. And last week, President Biden called me himself to talk about why farmers and ranchers need ocean shipping reform. And we had a great conversation. Today, I was at the White House with President Biden as he signed that bill into law. We look forward to building on my relationship with him to work towards solutions of other issues that are facing our farmers and ranchers.
Duvall says the legislation addresses supply chain obstacles.
Ocean Shipping Reform Act is a bipartisan bill that would take key steps to resolving maritime supply chain obstacles that are increasing costs to our U.S. agricultural exporters and preventing our farmers from getting their products overseas. Now that it's law, it will provide a new oversight enforcement authority through the Federal Maritime Commission, expanding the opportunities for our shippers to solve conflicts with the ocean carriers and to increase transparency and accountability among those ocean carriers.
Duvall says the ongoing supply chain issues and record high shipping costs have limited agriculture exports at a time when trading partners need the U.S. more than ever.
We are ready to meet the demands of American grown products here at home and abroad. But it requires a well-functioning supply chain. Limiting trade also negatively affects our farmers. It affects our ability to get much-needed supplies like fertilizer, which will ultimately drive up the cost of growing food for American families. Farmers have already lost up to $25 billion of agricultural exports this year because of the lack of access to export containers and record shipping costs and harmful surcharges.
Learn more at fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
House Ag Committee Ranking Member Glenn G.T. Thompson of Pennsylvania introduced a bill this week that Fox News says would strike back at several of the administration's agricultural policies. It would also strike down a recently proposed rule from the Securities and Exchange Commission that could potentially harm small farms. Thompson is introducing a bill with more than 20 co-sponsors during a time when America is dealing with significant inflation, especially in food prices. The bill has several provisions that Thompson says would help in many ways, including rescinding the SEC Scope 3 reporting rule. The rule requires public companies to report information like its carbon emissions, but also from sources up and down their supply chains. Thompson's bill also includes several provisions relating to fertilizer, including reinstating the National Environmental Policy Act of 2020, which would streamline mineral extraction for fertilizer production. The bill also reinstates the Trump-era Waters of the U.S. rule. The U.S. is pledging more short- and long-term help for Ukraine's agriculture. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
Ukraine's farmers are desperately trying to get what's left of last year's crops moved into export and to find room for the upcoming harvest while also fighting a war. At UN headquarters in New York Thursday, leaders from many nations held a roundtable meeting on the Ukraine situation, among other things.
Many of the countries at the meeting, and certainly the U.S., are very much interested in providing direct help and assistance to Ukraine.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters the U.S. is offering up help on many levels and has signed a memorandum of understanding with Ukraine.
It's an MOU that is a commitment by the U.S. Not only to focus on technical assistance today to assist the Ukrainians, but also a commitment when the war ends, as they begin to rebuild and restructure their agriculture, we're going to be there to help.
Meanwhile, on the effort to get Russia to open up Ukraine's seaports,
we certainly appreciate the fact that there's a serious negotiation taking place.
But he said he hopes the Russians are serious about it, too. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Last week, the House of Representatives passed legislation to approve year-round E15 sales. Eight farmers in buying precision agricultural tools that help reduce the use of fertilizer and other ag-related items. The bill is a package of separate agricultural-related provisions. It is being dubbed as the Lower Food the Fuel Cost Act, which has sparked dueling press events by House members on what exactly was needed to help farmers lower costs and increase productivity. The vote was 221-204. The bill now goes to the Senate, where at least some of the provisions will be taken up by the Senate Agriculture Committee.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Sanitation has been shown to be beneficial in reducing navel orangeworm populations and damage in pistachio orchards. However, the impact is not as great as has been demonstrated in almond. This is likely due to the inability to destroy mummies that are on the ground, according to research entomologist Brad Higby. The standard shaking and pulling efforts can reduce mummies in the trees as well as in almonds, but due to the smaller, harder nature of pistachio mummies, the typical mower shredder equipment is not able to pulverize the pistachio mummies as well as almond mummies.
We can remove mummies that are in the trees and pistachios just as well as we can in almonds. It kind of boils down to what we're able to do on the ground with the mummies once they hit the ground. So the equipment that does very well in shredding up almond mummies when they're on the ground after they've been, you know, windrowed, do not perform as well with pistachio mummies due to the nature of the mummies, the hard shell, and it's often considered to be like mowing marbles, I've heard people say. And so the result is we're left with many, many more mummies on the ground in pistachio orchards than we are in almonds. So this results in generally higher populations and pistachios most of the year.
Typically in pistachio orchards, there is a higher abundance of pistachio mummies on the ground than in almond orchards, leaving more opportunity for navel orangeworm larvae to penetrate.
With almond mummies, a very, very high percentage of those mummies are available for navel orangeworm infestation, whether they were infested when they hit the ground or not. If there are no mummies in the trees, these navel orangeworm moths will go to the ground and lay eggs on mummies. With pistachios, fewer of the pistachio mummies are really suitable for infestation because many are going to be blanks, many are going to be closed shell, which are much more difficult for the navel orangeworm larvae to get into the kernel. And so there are a lot more pistachio mummies, but a lower percentage of them are suitable for navel orangeworm development.
Questions began to arise about the impact of pistachio stannation on navel orangeworm damage and egg trap counts. Higby and a team looked at the impact of pistachio stannation on harvest damage and the number of mummies in the tree and on the ground after stannation was performed, as well as the impact on the number of eggs on egg traps. The team used a large pistachio orchard with multiple blocks that had non-sanitized and sanitized plots.
Well, of course, there were a lot more mummies in the trees and on the ground, and in terms of looking at egg traps, there was quite a difference in number of eggs laid. There were many more eggs laid in the sanitized plots. Perhaps a little counterintuitive, but I think it didn't necessarily reflect population or abundance differences. It was a matter of competition in the unsanitized plots. There were a lot of tree mummies, and they seemed to be the preference for navel orangeworm females to lay eggs. And so with a lot of tree mummies, they were likely laying eggs on those mummies in preference or in competition with the egg traps. So where we had very few tree mummies, we had much higher egg counts in general.
Concerns from growers will always arise in this type of situation as to how worthwhile it will be to actually sanitize in pistachio. At the end of the day, since it's navel orangeworm, it has to be taken care of no matter what. And the trials made this known to Higby.
If we could more thoroughly destroy ground mummies, we could have a much greater impact on navel orangeworm populations, which then might actually have some impact when it comes to harvest later in the season. In terms of when it is most worthwhile to sanitize, I think it's pretty safe to say that the earlier the better, I suppose, but certainly before bloom or you don't want to be shaking trees, for instance, when you're in bloom. So I would think you'd want to get it done well before pistachio bloom in any given year.
Higby stands by the notion that the industry needs to improve its sanitation tools in order to make pistachio sanitation easier for growers at the end of the day, saying that this is the best way to go about it.
People are looking at cover crops more extensively now. So if you had a nice cover crop with some rain, some irrigation, that would, if you can get your mummies into that windrow and have a more humid environment that's more conducive to the breakdown and degradation of the mummies, that can be a great, great tool and should help in terms of, eliminating host material for navel orangeworm as we move into the season. But that can be a little problematic, especially down in Kern County where we conducted these trials, where we don't get the rain down there, and most of the dry rows tend to be not not much vegetation, if any. And so another option would be to develop equipment that would do a better job of destroying these mummies. And I know there have been some efforts along these lines, but there are some challenges in making it practical and cost effective. And I think those are kind of the hurdles right now in terms of developing equipment that will reliably, destroy these mummies from last year's crop.
With current pistachio sanitation tools not as efficient as they can be, the practice is still worthwhile but will have the most impact in years of high NOW damage. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.